The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome in, everybody. It's another week of Kiefer and Curry, an award-winning program that we bring you every week here on Tony Curry Radio. Of course, we have presented ourselves with those awards. We haven't got anything officially, but we deserve it. Isn't that right, Tony?
It's good enough, brother. It's good enough.
All right. So self-bestowed award winners. This week, Tony, I want to talk about it. We've been kind of on the fringes of sports for a couple of weeks now. But I think something very significant happened on Saturday in Fort Worth, Texas. 104 degrees. Prime time, Neon Deion, first major college coaching assignment. Tony, I feel like Deion Sanders, during the offseason, after he got the job, wrote lots of checks with his words and his assurances and his actions. And on Saturday, he actually cashed those checks, which is saying a lot. Now, let me give a quick disclaimer before I throw it to you for your take on all this. I want to talk about Deion today and what the historical achievement he reached by winning on Saturday against the team that played for the national championship in the final game last year on the road with a team of 87 new faces. Now, I do want to make perfectly clear that I am not one of these people that draws conclusions on anything in week one. If you read Twitter, all of the information that's on there now are people either celebrating their team's greatness or lamenting that we're doomed, our team sucks. I'm not one of those. The whole season has to play out. If Colorado doesn't win another game, I still think the accomplishment on Saturday was significant, and I'm looking forward to telling you the reasons I feel that way. But what's your general take with that long preface?
Now, speaking of Twitter, we're recording the show here on September 5th. Last night, Clemson went down 28-7 against Duke. And of course, my son just started going to college there. My kid is the Schlepprock of sports. Whenever he starts wearing your jersey, you're going to get a torn ACL. He's like, Dad, he goes, what in the hell just happened my first game at Clemson? And they lose 28-7. No, the biggest four words we heard out of college football this first weekend, do you believe now? You can actually make that five words the way Deion Sanders said it. You mentioned the 87 newcomers. Did you realize, and I didn't know this, Colorado only has two winning seasons in the last 17 years. Did you realize that? I remember the Blockbuster Bowl back in 1990 seeing this Colorado Buffalo team. I remember that Buffalo team. When I saw they only had two winning seasons the last 17 years, I couldn't believe it. And I knew it was going to be something special when you see Deion Sanders wearing the boot the entire spring for about 8.5 weeks. He takes the boot off just before kickoff. He's running on the field after they win 45-42. The blood clots no more. Deion Sanders is the man. But listen, you knew that something special was happening in Colorado when they had 50,000 people show up to their spring game. And they hadn't they've never sniffed that, even when they were coming close to national championships back in the late 80s, early 90s. You never saw that. And I had no doubt that Deion Sanders was going to make a huge splash with Colorado because he is Deion Sanders. Not only because he's back-to-back SWAC champions and, of course, SWAC champion of the year and, of course, the coach of the year. But, I mean, the guy has made splashes his entire life. He played 14 years in the National Football League. He won 2 Super Bowls. He played 9 seasons, of course, a lot with the Atlanta Braves. So the man has done it all, and he's the only guy in sports history to both play in a World Series and a Super Bowl, and he almost won both. So, I mean, listen, whatever he touches, whatever he does, he's in Canton. I've touched his bust. I know that he's going to do special things. For him to pull this off against a team, like you just said, played in a national champ, a team that was undefeated before getting blown out against Georgia, for him to do what he did on Saturday was absolutely miraculous. It really was amazing. It was a perfect storm.
Yeah, and I think the repercussions of it, to me, it just did so much to advance the cause of, and this is not necessarily on racial lines, although sadly it plays into that to some extent, but a lot of guys that are coaching at lower levels and having great success are really never considered for positions on the upper echelon in the pecking order of college football. You know, we know what we're talking about, the five power conferences. Those jobs seem to recycle and go to guys that have been other places, that have been there, done that, not necessarily succeeded. But it seems like coaches in all levels of sports get lots of opportunities once they kind of get to that pedestal. And I think so many coaches that are very capable are overlooked and dismissed because it's the perception is that they have not coached on a high enough level to be legitimate. And that's a real risky undertaking. They'd rather take a guy that it's at least been at the helm of a major program other than a guy that's coming up from the ranks. And I think we're seeing more and more guys. The coach at Kansas came from North Dakota and has seemingly transformed the Jayhawks a little bit, another absolutely horrible program in the last 25 years. There's other examples as well. But I think, too, for the historically black colleges and universities, Deion Sanders made a huge statement. And isn't it funny, Tony? I don't know if you remember last year, one of the SWAC coaches, the Southwest Athletic Conference, I think it was the Alcorn State coach, said that, you know, don't tell me that Deion is pumping up our league or is doing anything for anybody except for Deion. And the guy had such a bad misunderstanding of, yes, Deion is the ultimate self-promoter, but man, he is lifting up everybody at that level and creating visibility. And that's why I think it's kind of a historic achievement. It's not on the same level as Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson in 1947, because racial lines have certainly been broken. But I think it's a bigger picture thing than that. I think it's recognition for levels of football, and guys that are winners are going to win wherever you put them.
Do you think those 87 newcomers at Colorado right now really care whether this is about Deion Sanders or about the Colorado Buffalo organization? I don't. Listen, if Deion Sanders has to wear the big jewelry and the big hat, and he's got to go out there in front of it. I wish I had seen. And by the way, I think you're spot on. If you're a rich black man, you certainly have a lot more opportunities afforded to you, particularly in major sports. And we're seeing that with everyone from LeBron James to Tiger Woods to Deion Sanders. And by the way, Paul Feinbaum making a very interesting association there with Tiger Woods and Deion Sanders. He came in and made a splash. What I do love about Deion Sanders is he did it right. I think he could have gotten that Colorado job before the 2021 season if he really wanted it. I think he could have gone in there and pined for that job and gotten that job, but I don't know if he would have been ready. And the fact that he was SWAC champion of the year, and of course, SWAC coach of the year 2 years running in 2021 and 2022, I think that helped his pedigree to say, listen, I am a coach and I can do this at a much bigger level. And he did that. And to your point, the way you started the show, I thought was brilliant. It's one game. Do I think Dabo Sweeney is going to go 1-11 this year because they lost to Duke last night? No. Do I think Colorado is going to go 11-1? No, I don't. And by the way, I love doing research for the show and I love numbers and I'm kind of a math guy. In the last 10 years, teams that have given up 42 points or more in their opener average two wins that season. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We're still talking about a football team that gave up a lot of points in that first game. And now, listen, you're taking on a Nebraska squad that only scored 10 against Minnesota this past week.
Yes.
Talk about the perfect story. By the way, do you know before the season started, Nebraska was an 8-point favorite in this game, and right now they're a 3-point dog? That line has moved 11 points in a week and a half. So everyone's jumping on the Colorado bandwagon. And I think they think that, hey, and they only gave up, Nebraska did only 13 points. They get a pretty decent defense. So a lot of people are thinking they're going to be putting up 40s every single game. It's just not going to happen. But to your point, I do think it's fantastic. I think it's great for everything. If you're a Deion Sanders hater, you're always going to hate him, period. You're not going to like it. And you certainly don't like the fact that he showed absolutely no remorse or humility in his post-game conference, even calling out reporters saying, I told you. Are you the one that asked the question? The one woman said, I didn't ask that question. I don't know what you're talking about. He was looking for someone to pile on big time. But it was all about Deion Sanders in that post-game conference. I wish it would have been more about his football players, including, of course, his son, who threw for 5'10" and 4 touchdowns, and his other son, who led the led the team in tackles. It was a Sanders affair, man. It was unbelievable. It was almost like the Ball family was running the Colorado Buffaloes program. It was unbelievable.
That's a great correlation. That absolutely is. Shedder Sanders, let's talk about that. I think Deion's frustration and unleashing it, which hopefully he'll take the higher road from this point on. But I think as a dad, and I know you are too, you've already mentioned your son on the show. I think if you want to get into territory where you're going to get in a serious trench war, just criticize someone's son. And they didn't directly criticize Shedder Sanders. Shedder Sanders. Mm-hmm. When Deion in his press conference said, well, I can already tell you who the quarterback's going to be. It's going to be Shedder Sanders. And he was barbecued, Tony. I mean, completely run across the coals. I remember one columnist said, what is this, Little League? I'm the coach and my son's going to be the quarterback.
Well,
you know, that was the attitude, and all the snooty know-it-all media, who most of them never put on a pad or a helmet, were not participating in football, but now all of a sudden they second guess everything. And you can picture a lot of the guys I'm talking about. You know, to me, that criticism really stung him because he believed in his kid. He knew how good he was. And Shedder Sanders backed up his dad incredibly. You know how much I like history. I make reference to it all the time on my other show here on TKR. There was a situation, and bear with me here. I'm going to do this quickly.
Yeah.
340 BC. I'm going to go back to to an example. 340 BC, the province of Macedonia, or just Macedon at the time, was a Greek province. King Philip had completely changed all their fortunes, built up their economy, made a strong military. He had an 18-year-old son. When they got in the war with the other Greek states to gain control of that great empire, he assigned his 18-year-old son to lead the cavalry charge, be the commander. I'm sure there was a lot of discord because this kid had never been in a battle before, and now he's commanding an entire force. They charge, led by this 18-year-old son of King Philip. They handily defeat the Spartans and the Athenians and all of the other vaunted Greek forces, and Macedonia becomes the dominant force in Greek history for the last couple of hundred years of that empire. That guy turned out to be pretty good. His, mm-hmm. his name turned out to be in history to be Alexander the Great. So, this is not unprecedented. If you're a dad and you have faith in your kid and know they can do the job, I remember coaching my son Case in Little League and youth football, and he had important responsibilities because, Tony, usually he was one of the best guys on the team. I also coached at an early age. I was 6 years older than my younger brother. And on that team, my younger brother didn't get very much playing time at all because he was the worst player on the team. So, you know, all of this politics and everybody assuming that he was just given opportunities to his kid. Wow, Shedder Sanders made Deion look like a genius on Saturday.
I would love to fast forward and see what this squad's going to look up after the Nebraska game, obviously after they play Oregon, after they play Utah, after they play number 6 USC. But that's going to be fun and watching all that. You know, it's amazing, too, because I don't think anyone's more difficult on their sons than their fathers. You think a coach can be tough on a kid? You watch a coach slash a father be tough on his kid. And I've seen Deion and how he deals with his son. And while he's not filled with humility at all, I'm hoping his son is. And just based on the way he spoke after the game, it seems like he's just a little bit down below where his father was when he was a prime time, for sure. It does make me wonder, though, because I think about all the amazing hires I had. And obviously I have another show here on Tony Curry Radio called the UAB Director's Chair, and Trent Dilfer will be joining us on our show on ABC 3340 here in the next couple of weeks. Can't wait to get him on. A guy who never coached a college football game in his life. He coached a couple seasons up there in Nashville, Tennessee at a high school, did quite well. Thank you very much. And obviously has not only the vernacular to be a coach, but also just the pedigree. I mean, he obviously won a Super Bowl. He's very well spoken. He's got the ESPN pedigree, which a lot of people absolutely love. He can get his players into the National Football League. He's got the phone numbers. He's got the call list. He's got the Rolodex to make that happen. But I think a lot of people, when UAB sat down, Mark Ingram walked in. There were about 24 different candidates. He sat down with the board of directors and said, okay, who do you guys got? Let's start making this list. They got down to about five people. And all of a sudden, before they picked that final candidate, someone called him up and said, have you thought about this guy named Trent Dilfer? And he's like, the football player? And they're like, yeah, you should sit down and at least have a conversation with him. Mark came in later that afternoon and said, I just met with Trent Dilfer. What do y'all think about Trent Dilfer? And they said, Mark was crazy. Like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? UAB hasn't had a losing season since we brought football back in 2017. Why in the world are we bringing a guy who has not coached one college football game? He said, butts in seats. Butts in seats. I just mentioned 50,000 people showed up at the Colorado Spring game. And I think about some of the good time hires we've had in the past. Pete Rose coming back to the Cincinnati Reds. Bill Stewart. Do you remember when Bill Stewart was hoisted up on the shoulders of his players after they won that playoff game? He was not going to get that head coaching job. He was given the job at West Virginia. What did he do the following season? It fell apart. Trent Dilfer. I can even go as far as to say Dennis Miller from Monday Night Football. That would have been a brilliant move if you understand Dennis Miller and what kind of humor he has.
Yeah,
you thought that was a great hire, but we're too stupid when we're watching Monday Night Football. NFL fans aren't that smart to get his type of dry humor, but I thought it was great. I enjoyed watching Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football. So these feel-good off-hires like a Deion Sanders out of Colorado, I can make the argument that they're 11-1 last season and coach decided to retire. Would they have brought Deion Sanders in? Probably no. Probably a hell no. They were 1-11. They've only had two winning seasons the last 17 years. What do you have to lose? But I will say this, and to back up everything you've said so far, it seemed to be working so far, at least 60 minutes into the season.
Yeah. I mean, he had that was prime time on Saturday.
No doubt.
Everything, all the hype, all of the attention, all of the national TV dates. And probably
one of the best games to watch, too. There wasn't a whole lot to watch this weekend. It was a great game to watch. Continue.
Because think about it, Tony. He cleaned house basically after spring practice when he assessed the talent and decided there wasn't any. He encouraged guys to look elsewhere because they weren't going to be in their plans. He started the transfer portal, was more active than the Enterprise on Star Trek. He was beaming people up from all over every corner, every small school, major schools. He had Travis Hunter follow him from Jackson State. Travis Hunter, by the way, we need to mention him. He played both ways in that game, 104 degrees, 129 snaps. And Tony played wide receiver and corner. Mm. You don't stand still a single play. If you're a lineman or a quarterback, you can dog at a play or two. If you're a corner or a wide receiver, you're running a route or chasing somebody running a route or supporting run defense. He made probably the critical play in the game on defense when he left his man, when he recognized where a pass was going, and made an unbelievable interception, caught a touchdown pass, had 11 receptions. Travis Hunter, if we were voting for Heisman Trophy today, would be the leader in the clubhouse for sure. What a performance. And, you know, Shedeur Sanders, I talked about TCU, Rosa, Colorado's going to have problems on defense. They got a lot to fix there, but those guys were gassed. I mean, when you practice in Boulder, Colorado, where it's about 80 degrees every day and then go play where it's 104, of course they're going to wear down, and they did, but give that offense credit and young Mr. Sanders, because twice when TCU took the lead late in the third and early in the fourth, he brought them right down the field, executed flawlessly, and scored go-ahead touchdowns that ultimately resulted in the 45-42 win. So it was just a spectacular thing to behold. And like we have said here, and Colorado may just be a 500 team at best. Who knows? But as far as making, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And Dion, after talking it up for a long time, telling people what was going to happen, assuring people that he was competent and was going to make the right decisions. Wow, did they come through with flying colors.
And kudos to Sonny Dykes, who took the high road after that game. And there's really no road you can take when you lost to a team that just went 1-11 last season and has a first-year coach in primetime. But he said, listen, we got out-coached. They wanted it more than we did. At the end of the game, they kind of gave up. When they finally got the lead with this little over 4 minutes left, they thought they probably had that thing in the can. They just wanted to get the hell out of there. And Sonny Dykes said, listen, they wanted it more than we did. And you talk about the conditioning. In playing in Colorado in 80-degree weather, and I know the air is a little thinner there too, and that certainly helps their cause, but everyone was waiting for them to fall apart in the third and fourth quarter. I saw hands on hips, but I didn't see legs stop moving. I thought they played unbelievable, and the defense did just enough to give that offense the chance to go down the field. Yes, Shador had to put up 510 yards and four touchdowns, but he did. And I don't know what this says. The first thing I thought of when I saw this is, what is every other coach in the country right now thinking about Deion Sanders? First of all, they're scoffing, rolling their eyes, going, yeah, well, it's only one game. I get that. But when you can, when you have that type of turnover and you have 87 newcomers, a lot of people even said, yes, if you're 1-11, you should have 87 newcomers. But a lot of it probably was schematic. A lot of it had to do with coaching. You can't tell me that some of those 87 players weren't college football preference player guys. I mean, these aren't guys that can't play at the next level, because a lot of guys did move on and go to play for other teams. A lot of guys playing first string. So, I mean, you can't tell me they didn't fit the scheme or fit the coaching staff. And I'm wondering to myself, what is this saying to other college football coaches around the country? And by the way, shame on the Twitter people out there who are giving TCU a hard time, saying they never deserved to be in the Final Four last year. They knocked off a Michigan squad that a lot of people had winning a national title last year. And now they're saying they got blown out against Georgia and they just lost to a 1-11 Colorado. This is not the same 1-11 Colorado team. It is not. But I'm wondering what other coaches around the country are going, wow. I mean, when I've got 13, 14 guys coming back on offense and defense, I'm probably going to be picked to win my conference. This guy lost 87 players. His son's playing quarterback. His other son's playing on defense. And they just knocked off the team that went to the national championship last year. Maybe I'm not doing things right.
And they did that as a 19.5-point dog, Tony.
I had it at 21.
Even got as high as 21 on game day. So that's astounding in its own right. I think you're asking a good question. What are other coaches thinking? I know Nick Saban's thinking, shoot, this guy's going to take recruits away from me. I'm not doing an Aflac commercial with him next year.
Probably one of the all-time greatest endorsement deals ever, because Aflac started doing that right when he was the SWAC coach. I don't think they even knew that he was going to be knocking off TCU in the first game of Colorado. I hope they inked him to a long-term deal, because he's looking for some extra cash now.
That's for sure. So, you know,
and almond commercials too. He's also doing California almond commercials now too.
Oh, that's true. He is. Coaches are, what are they thinking? More importantly to me, what is a junior, very high level football player sitting at home watching that game after playing his game on Friday night thinking, how many kids out there, Tony, that are big time football talents in high school were watching that game thinking, I want to get in on this. I want to go to Colorado and play for Deion. Mm-hmm. I think that's the real massive wave, because basically in one game, and if there's any continuing success, he's going to make Colorado a national recruiting power, not just a regional, because Colorado's a tough place to recruit. They've primarily depended on trying to get secondary players out of California over the years. Now, all of a sudden, that recruiting base with Deion at the helm, and it's why I made the argument and continue to make the argument. Hugh Freeze off to a great start. Good for Auburn. Maybe that's going to work out. You never know. But they could have placed a call to Jackson, Mississippi, and that would have been a lot more attractive job. And Auburn would be the team right now with a whole slew of new players. They really needed to restock their shelves. I'm not convinced that Hugh Freeze has done that sufficiently, I think if Auburn wins 6 or 7 games this year, it's going to be good. And Colorado may win that same level. But Colorado's got the entire focus of the country on them. And that could have been Auburn or any other team who hired a new coach, because Colorado probably was the last Division I program Deion really wanted to go to. But Phil George, the athletic director, had the foresight to reach out to him, and Deion took the bait. So, I think a lot of programs might be questioning their strategic hires. And again, just kind of dismissing Deion because of the experience factor that you did such a good job of describing.
If Deion wins 10 games in his third season, that would be a miraculous hire. Not only because they're coming off a 1-win season, but because they've only gotten 2 winning seasons the last 17 years. I mean, any winning season is going to be good. So I'm thinking to myself, 3-4 wins this year, 6-7 wins next year. Maybe if it all comes together in his third recruiting class, maybe he gets 10 wins. So I'm going to put you on the spot. We're going game by game. I want you to tell me how many games Colorado wins this year. They won their first all game. Right. They're an actual 2.5-point favorite against Nebraska next game at home.
Yeah, Nebraska didn't show much offense against Minnesota. Now, they have a high-profile coach, Rule, who's who transformed Baylor into a power and then failed at the Carolina Panthers in the NFL. That's not unusual for a college coach not to take his game to that level. But he's back at Nebraska, and Cornhusker fans, Tony, this was a mighty program at one time, and you talk about a hard times. They were probably one of the doormats of the Big Ten last year.
Well, you want to talk about a feel-good hire in Coach Frost, and that didn't go too well.
No, that's exactly right. He was the conquering hero coming home, and yep, what a disaster. So Colorado at home with all that momentum, Nebraska not having much firepower. I think it's going to be, I think it's another W.
All right. Then they're going to probably start 3-0 because they got Colorado State at home, third game.
Yeah, who's just a dreadful team, and they have beaten them like a drum in recent years.
Let's go Colorado to Oregon. Any shot there against Nix and company?
No, if you missed it, Bo Nix put up 81 points this week against Portland State. That was a big in-state rivalry. 81.
How in the hell was he not a better quarterback at Auburn? I cannot. I listen, I know what it was, but I still can't figure out how they let that kid go, particularly with the pedigree and his old man played there.
He was born with an AU diaper.
How is that not possible? All right, so a loss to Oregon. Then they're hosting USC, number 6 in the country. A loss there?
Yeah, probably. Although I think USC's defense still is pretty questionable, but too much firepower. I don't see them winning that game.
Home of the Arizona State cheerleaders, Colorado at Arizona State. Win or loss?
Yeah, it disturbs me. That's a road game. I think they would win that in Boulder. But Arizona State, good enough at home. I think that's another loss.
Then they host Stanford, who's looking for a home.
Yeah, I don't think Stanford is a powerhouse anymore. I think they've fallen on kind of hard times. I like Deion and the Buffs in Boulder.
Let's take Colorado on the road against the Bruins, UCLA.
Yeah, Chip Kelly's got it going on pretty good at UCLA. He's lost his 4-year starting quarterback, so haven't really looked at UCLA carefully yet. But that's another road challenge that I don't think they'll win.
Interesting game with the Beavers visiting Colorado on November 4th.
Yeah, and their new quarterback, DJ Ungulele, the transfer from Clemson. I wonder if Dabo's on the phone today going, DJ, I'm sorry, it was all my fault. I want you back.
Please come home. So you're taking a loss there?
No, I'm going to pick Colorado to win there. I think Oregon State's got a really good team, but that's the kind of team that may be a little thin in the ranks. And by that point of the season, that's going to be a tough game on the road. That's a toss up, but I'm going to give the edge to the Buffs.
They will have knocked off 2 top 20 teams in Coach Prime's first season, if that's true. Arizona, Colorado.
Yeah, Arizona's trying to rebuild their program. I don't like that team very much. They'll be in the Big 12 next year. They're playing out the string here. Another win for Colorado.
And then Colorado goes to Pullman. Home of the famous duck sandwich. Mike Leach used to love the duck sandwiches in Pullman.
Oh, man. I tell you what, the end of the earth, the hardest place to get to in major college football. you don't see any leagues courting Washington State, and that's kind of a shame. they're going to have a big chip on their shoulder this year. I think they will deal Colorado another loss.
It reminds me a lot of Starkville. You can't wait to get there, but you can't wait to get the hell out. And sometimes if you take the wrong road, you're not getting out of there either. And then finally, Colorado at Utah.
Yeah, that's another tough one. I don't think they win that one either. So I don't know what that adds up to. What, 6-7?
6-6.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I think a lot of Colorado fans would take a 6-6. I mean,
that's big progress from 1-11.
A bowl game?
And that puts them, more importantly, Tony, that puts them in a bowl game.
That does. That's amazing stuff. A couple of top 20 wins. You heard it there from Kip Kiefer. He's picking Colorado to go to a bowl game. There you go.
Yeah, well.
Could you imagine? Because next year, I mean, the conference realignment's not going to be finished. It's an absolute mess. I'm hoping the Pac-12 can hold it together. I really think there's a shot that's going to happen. I think some Mountain West teams may be willing to let go of the $13 to $34 million it takes to get out, just because of the TV money that's involved in the Pac-12. But could you imagine Coach Prime being in the final 12 of the college football playoffs, maybe in the next couple of 2-3 years? How amazing of a story would that be?
It would really be something. And if those kids play like they did Saturday, I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility.
Great topic, my friend. We'll talk about it next week here on the Kiefer and Curry Show on Tony Curry Radio. Of course, you can hear this show brand new time, 11:30 now, 11:30 every Monday through Friday right here on TKR. And of course, more importantly, our podcast. You can go check out all of our shows, a Tony Curry Radio podcast. Just search that. You can hear us on Spotify, iTunes, on every major indice out there. You'll find our podcast, the Kiefer and Curry Show on Tony Curry Radio. Check it out. And also, don't forget, coming up again this Saturday, 10:30 to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning, butts up right against that ACC game of the week, that early game of the week. We saw Tennessee absolutely run roughshod against Virginia. Hopefully we'll have a better matchup this Saturday, or Kip, but we're going to be on the air there, ABC 3340 with the legend. We'll have Terry Quillian on there. We're going to have Case Kiefer giving some more picks. A rough start this past weekend, but we'll come back. We'll bounce back this weekend with winners coming up this Saturday, 10:30 to 11 on ABC 3340. Have yourself a great week, my friend.
Tony, same here. Great topic, great time, and everybody have a great week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.